is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The king's in his counting house.
Heading down towards the last fight in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viciosi jumped it perfectly.
You're very welcome along to an absolutely stacked episode of From the Horse's Mouth. Paddy and Ruby join me for an exclusive interview with Jesse Harrington. Racing Gold features a better Guineas winner than Frankel, according to Ruby Walsh. The Book Club concludes, and Frank Hickey is on with a few tips for the Guineas. All that and more straight from the horse's mouth. Yes, you're very welcome back, and of course, like a good shot in the arm that we all needed, racing is back on terrestrial television, and we've had a great week on the satellite channels, but it's all about really free to air, and we're looking forward to another good weekend in Newmarket Classic action. But we've already had some decent performances, Ruby. A couple of good ones. We had French Classics last weekend, but a couple of decent horses in the UK. Frankly Darling got a lot of press during the week. Couple of good young horses coming out.
Yeah, she looked very good, obviously, for John Gosden, and she was shortened up immediately after for the Oaks. To be honest, Tom, I didn't see too many others. I mean, it is quite hard. We're looking at maidens when you have no form lines, and to be honest, I was never a massive fan of 80 to 95 handicap hurdles when I was riding in them, let alone not the 50 flat handicaps on the all-weather in the UK. So there was some good racing, but there was plenty of average stuff as well, but thankfully from today on there's more Group 1 racing and more proper racing. And even when you look at how Ireland starts on Monday with Nace, at least there's two listed sprints to go with the maidens and the handicaps. There's a bit of quality to go with the quantity, and outside of Frankly Darling, I'm not sure. Maybe there was a two-year-old or two, but until they step up and reappear, who knows? But Frankly Darling was about the only one I saw of interest.
Well, Frankly Darling, I thought you were a bit downbeat there, Paddy. It was good to have racing back, and I thought Ruby was a bit subdued there, because maybe they weren't top-class performances, but it's just good to have something on the box.
Yeah, I feel a bit spoiled and a bit guilty, because I see where Ruby's coming from, and there was a bit of that on Monday. I felt guilty about it because I was kind of really looking forward to it. Then you turn it on and, like, she's having a whinge, but shouldn't be having a whinge. But it's pretty average race that, like, a few months ago you wouldn't be getting excited about it. But thankfully we did have the French, good quality French to sprinkle in with it, and kind of really appreciated that a bit more than I would have if it was just French racing on. And but it just whets the appetite a little bit for, because you're kind of getting back into the swing of it. Like Ruby said, you're kind of wondering what trainers are going to be in form, and I kind of intuitively think that's important. I don't know if it is. You think that's important, like, I mean, who's got their horses right and all that, and it all looks a bit weird. So something like the setup and the way the racetracks are. So you're kind of getting your eye in for the rest of the month, I think, like, so this weekend particularly. Like, so I'm really looking forward to today and Saturday and Sunday as well, just to get some top quality action. I mean, we'd see you see some of the big guns out, because I don't know, I kind of got the feeling that there was some good performance, like you said, but I kind of got the feeling that it was only a starter and aperitif or something.
Aperitif indeed. And Ruby, we spoke about French racing there, and just a quick word on Victor Ladorum, who looked impressive when getting the job done in the French 2000 Guineas.
Oh, I agree. I don't think he got the job done. I think he absolutely blew them away. It was a strongly run race that ran 36 seconds or just over for the first three furlongs, which is brisk early fractions. And, you know, they clocked 1:34, which means they were averaging over 42, probably 43 miles an hour every step of the way in the straight mile in Deauville. I thought it was a really good performance. The further he was going, the better he was going. He quickened up smartly and looked the winner from a long way down. He has French Derby stamped all over him. But, you know, with Pinatubo to come tomorrow, with Siskin to come next Friday, you could have three individual Guineas winners setting up for a clash somewhere down the road. That'd be really exciting.
Yes, Guineas action on the way this weekend. Of course, 2,000 Guineas on Saturday. But a lady who'll be very much in the mix in the 1,000 Guineas with her Mill Isle is Mrs. Jessica Harrington. Jessie, how are you? Thanks a million for joining us. How are you keeping?
Couldn't be better. Can't go anywhere, so why wouldn't I be?
very good. Well, you can't go anywhere, but you've got a horse going to a very important place this weekend. Mill Oil heads over to Newmarket. How are things?
Well, listen, as well as I know they are, she's done all her work. I'm very happy with her preparation. She seems to be in good form. And the great thing about her is she's been to England already twice last year as a two-year-old. And she more or less took it in her stride each time she went.
Jessie, it must give you great confidence with a three-year-old, that considering how well she travelled as a two-year-old, it makes it a bit easier because travelling is hard on horses.
Yeah, she's a very good traveller, really good traveller. And, you know, last year she was great. The only time she got a bit upset was in Salisbury when they took blood off her just before the race. But, you know, even that, she still ran a good race there, but she was even better when she went to Newmarket.
And obviously last year she was ridden by Shane Foley, but with quarantine rules, and you're obviously going to want Shane next weekend at the Curragh, or Shane Murphy takes over.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to get Oisin. He's never sat on her, but look, she's very straightforward. And hopefully he'll get on great with her.
Jesse, just before we came on, we were running through some of the names of particularly the fillies. You have three-year-old fillies for this season. You've got a real strong bunch, and you were kind of banging in winners on the flat. Anywhere we looked, there was winners trained by Jessica Harrington on the flat last season. And you've kind of built up that side of the business a lot over the last few years. I was looking back at it this morning, 2000, I think you had maybe five winners in the flat, 2010, 30 winners. And last season, kind of high 60s, an excellent season on prize money as well. So it's really taken off for you, that side of it, hasn't it?
Yeah, look, we've been lucky enough to get, you know, we've had some nice flat horses. And it's the same thing as if you do, you know, I got some nice flat horses that won some good races. Alpha Centauri probably was a big benefit, help to me. And I got sent more flat horses and probably a much better quality horse.
Obviously in the same colours as Alpha Centauri, you have Albina and Alpine Star. Are they likely to take each other on next Saturday in the Curragh?
At the moment, not. The plan is for Albina to go there and Alpine Star to go to the Coronation Stakes in Ascot.
That's a nice way of splitting them up. And you had a few other stars as well. Obviously, last year you had Cayenne Pepper and Valeria Miscellina. Are you likely to have two in the Irish 1,000 guineas, seeing as you won't have two in the Arcos runners?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to run Valeria Miscellina. She's going to go to the Irish guineas. And Cayenne Pepper is probably going to run first out in a mile and a quarter Oaks trial, because the Oaks is her aim.
She won over a mile, or she was placed in the fillies mile, but she did win over a mile last year. Would you be confident of her getting an Oaks trip?
Yes, very confident. You know, she's by Australia. I can't actually remember what the dam is by, but like she's definitely one that I think we always thought would stay.
I mean, you say pedigrees there mentioning her being by Australia. Obviously, Mill Isle, who runs in Newmarket at the weekend, is by Star Sangle Banner. He was a sprinter. Would you have any concerns with her going to a mile?
Not really, because if you look at when she won the Cheveley Park, she wasn't going to win anything when they got into the dip. And when she hit the rising ground, she stayed on very well and ran out, you know, ran right through the line to the extent that Shane had difficulty pulling her up. I trained her half-sister and she won, and she was over, I think, a mile and a half, and she was placed in a listed race over a mile and six. So I think there's plenty of stamina in the pedigree.
You're hoping Star Spangled Banner's putting no speed into it.
Well, I hope so. And she's a filly that will relax. I know she won over five furlongs twice last year before she was stepping up to six. But in Newmarket, they went so quick that she actually relaxed. And if she'll just be dropped in behind, I'd say a little bit, and just get her relaxed to come home.
You're probably like most trainers in that you don't really care about the opposition, but having raced against most of them last year as two-year-olds, does any one of them worry you most?
Well, they all worry me right at this moment. They're all a danger. You know, Raffles Prize finished behind her in Cheveley. Quadrangle beat Cayenne Pepper in the Phillies Mile. She took quite a long time as well to get going that day. So whether, you know, as a three-year-old, whether she'll want a bit further. Look, Love won the Moy Glare here. It's a Group 1 winner. At the moment, they're all a danger.
And just on a staffing front, obviously you've had to send people with Mill Isle to Newmarket. What way are you going to work with them when they come back? Will they have to Are you going to leave staff there for Royal Ascot? Are you bringing staff home? It must be a bit of a nightmare, really.
Well, I've probably done it. And she's going over with a driver, and she's being met over there by a lad that I employed, had been with me the last 2 years, and we've sort of kind of worked it around like that.
Oh, you found someone over there. That's very intuitive.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to do things in this day and age a little bit outside, thinking outside the box.
Jessica, just one question for me. I'm scratching my head at the moment for particularly for you, because I have you down as a trainer that when you're in form, you're in unbelievable form and you seem to bang in loads of winners together. And so you're going over for one of the big races now. And like, how do you know where your horses are at because you haven't had any racing? Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, is it just a feel, or is there times or anything when you're working them, or is it just you feel like she's in great form and all that, or is there something scientific that you can point to?
Look, the way she'd been working, it was sort of a bit stop go, because originally she was always in for the English Guineas, and then it sort of got into a bit of a muddle when we didn't know when the English Guineas was going to be run. But we had her built up, we let down a bit, and we built her up again. She's a very straightforward filly. But actually, last year she never ever worked with another horse. She only ever worked on her own. So this year she has been working with another horse. So, you know, we sort of understand her, and Shawnee, who rides her out every day, definitely understands her.
Jesse, it's obviously been a tricky time for everyone, and particularly horse trainers. Are we likely to see a lot of runners from you over the next few weeks? Are the string kind of itching, ready to go, and just get them out and get them running?
Yeah, we're definitely itching, ready to go. The only problem is that we're going to have good to firm ground, and I have few, anything that can go on that will run. Anything that needs a little dig in the ground, we're just going to have to be very patient with, because what's the point of waiting all this time and then going wrecking them the first time they run?
And before we let you go, it would be remiss of me not to ask, any 2-year-olds named yet worth keeping an eye out for?
Well, we're running a few this weekend to get a guideline on where they stand. But look, I look to have some nice, I have a nice filly now. I have great difficulty getting this name, a nice Australia filly called Udanata. I can't say it. And every time I talk to the owner, I get a rocket pronouncing it the wrong way. And I'm sure I pronounced it the wrong way now.
Okay, well, for our purposes, that's perfect. We'll just look out for an Australia filly trained by Jessica Harrington with a very strange name. Jessica Harrington, thanks a million for joining us, and best of luck at the weekend and for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Horse racing, eh? A field of horses you've never heard of, and then the start's delayed so the coverage goes split screen with another race. Pwah! But given we've had so little sport recently, those unknown horses are just the next big thing, and delayed races builds the anticipation. Split screen, double the excitement. Racing, we've missed you. And to celebrate, Paddy Power are giving money back as a free bet if your horse finishes second, third or fourth in the 150 at Newmarket today. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, applies to singles only. Shop bets excluded. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
It's week 3, and we're finding that there were actually a few more stupid questions than we were anticipating, so it's back, and it's Paddy Power's Stupid Questions.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's great to have a section of the show that's kind of dedicated to me, so it does make me feel a bit more important and integral to it, because I don't really offer a huge amount else. Anyway, I can read out questions. So at Bert Lukey has, this is actually, I really like this question, so I don't know the answer to this, and Ruby, you should be able to answer this, right? Even though you can reply to the flash rather than the frat. So at Bert Lukey asks, if a horse has a pacemaker from the same yard, why is it seen as a positive just for that horse or that trainer? Surely others in the field might benefit from a stronger pace too.
They would, but the pacemaker would generally be put in for a horse who wants a strong gallop end to end. Of course, it would benefit other horses, and Aidan O'Brien is forever saying that he wants races to be run at a fast, even pace, and it suits everybody. But pacemakers can also be dummies calling your bluff. You could have a horse in there that's a perceived pacemaker that mightn't make the pace at all, and therefore throws everybody's tactics up in the air.
Okay, so I might double bluff it. And I always found it weird that pacemakers are never kind of frowned upon, like as in terms of every horse test and all that kind of stuff?
They're not. I don't think they're allowed in Australia, are they?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Not so sure they are. But
the Melbourne Cup is always scandal, isn't there? If
there somebody, is, yeah. I'm sure there's a reason, but I think it's reflected in the horse's odds.
Yeah.
That you perceive it to be a pacemaker. But look, a pacemaker is a tricky thing too. If you put in a horse that's not good enough and it jumps out and goes, nobody's going to follow it. So then it becomes irrelevant to the race. So the pacemaker has to be of enough quality that everybody has to follow it to make sure it's an end-to-end race. Because if you let it off, it's going to keep going. Like you saw in last year's Irish Derby with Sovereign.
They get a niche following as well, the old pacemakers. I remember Bullet Train, Frankel's pacemaker, had a bit of a fan club there for a while. But anyway, go on.
He wasn't even fast enough to stay in front of Frankel.
@BazTurk26 asks, what are the main effects of and differences between blinkers, visors and hoods?
Well, a blinker and a visor would be the complete opposite to a hood. A hood is to pacify or quieten a horse down, whereas blinkers or visors are to sharpen horses up and make them concentrate harder. So they're the complete opposite. They both come under headgear, but a hood covers a horse's ears, blocks out all the sound to try and quieten them down. Blinkers are a full cup around the horse's eye. A horse's vision is not the same as ours. The horse sees all the way left and right of himself, back as far as his tail. So it's to shorten how much a horse can see and make him concentrate and look in front of him. And in a visor, there's a slit in the cup which covers the horse's eye on a visor. And so the horse can see it a small little bit behind him. That's the difference. A blinker is a full cup. A visor is there's a slit in the cup on a visor.
Okay. Let's see. There's a few more about blinkers and visors. That's good. You've done that one. And then are horses primarily off the bit or on the bit when racing? And what's the difference?
They should be on the bit until 2 furlongs from home and then off the bit. On the bit means they're traveling within their comfort zone. Off the bit means they're flat out. The worse the horse, the longer it can run flat out. The better the horse, the longer it can run flat out.
And very quickly, the last one is who would win in a fight between the National Hunt jockeys and the flat jockeys?
There is the first stupid question you've asked.
May 1993 was an interesting, optimistic time. The UK government announced the end of a financial recession, Queen Elizabeth opened Buckingham Palace to the public and welcomed Mary Robinson, the first ever meeting between a British sovereign and an Irish head of state. It was an interesting time for racing too. The Grand National had been voided after a false start and Sea Hero was a shock winner of the Kentucky Derby. At Newmarket though, as the European flat season kicked into gear, so did Zafonic.
Zafonic is in a line of four for last place. It's going to have to be a very good horse to win from there. And it's Silver Wizard leading. Silver Wizard the leader and nominator there, one and two, followed by Wharf in third, Revelation. There goes Zafonic on the far side. He's on the extreme left now, is Zafonic. And they've got 2.5 furlongs to go. Nominator, Barathea, Zafonic on the left. He's absolutely pulling double. They've got just 1.5 furlongs to go. And it's Zafonic now given the office. But Barathea is making a race of it, but Ennery gives the go on Zafonic. This is the tonic we waited to see, and it's Zafonic coming clear by 2, 3, 4 Barathea. Bidadois for places only, but this is a very good horse. This is Zafonic, the winner. Barathea, a great run, second Bidadois, third Batardia, fourth in the
Well, Zafonic dropped out last. He's going to have to be a very good horse to win from there. So said the commentator of the day. And he proved to be rather good. Ruby Walsh, Zafonic, you're a fan.
I am. And there was Guinea's replays on there for during the lockdown. There was every sort of replay on. But I hadn't watched Zafonic winning for many years. And it took my eye. And I saw it again during the week. And I was thinking, you know, not as a racehorse, because there's no doubt about which is the better racehorse. But purely on the performance in a Guineas, I think Zafonic was better than Frankel. Now, there's no doubt Frankel was the better racehorse. That goes without question. So I went looking it up. They both got time form figures, speed ratings. Zafonic got a 134 and Frankel got a 136. Frankel's had to be altered because of the fractions he ran early in the race. And obviously, they were ridden completely different. Frankel jumped and blitzed all the way, whereas Zafonic, Pat Ellery, dropped him in last and came scorching home. Now, Frankel beat the Bowie Gold and Native Can. The Bowie Gold won one Group 2 after Native Can never again won a race. Siphonic beat Barratea 3.5 lengths, who then went and won the Irish Guineas, won a Queen Anne and a Breeders' Cup mile. Now, the Queen Anne was a Group 2 at the time. And Bin Ajwad, who was third, 6.5 lengths behind Frankel, just like Native, or behind Siphonic, just like Native Can was behind Frankel. He won 2 Group 3s and a listed race. I would say Siphonic, without doubt, won the better race. He beat better opposition, and he did so in the time 2 seconds quicker than Frankel. I think he was a better Guineas winner than Frankel. He wasn't a better horse, but he was a better Guineas winner.
My word, a compelling argument, Paddy, from Ruby there. All facts and figures, and the evidence is in front of you and pretty plain to see, is it?
I wouldn't disagree with that, because I think generally we've just, in the more recent times, we're just desperate to get more and more champions. I think the ratings are handed out a bit easier than they maybe they were in historically. So maybe it's hard to judge like, but like, I mean, Frankel's was, like, that was impressive what we just saw, but Frankel's visually was pretty awesome. And also the commentator has a lot to do with it as well. The way the commentator calls the race, I think, unless you're a total nerd like Ruby, a total racing nerd, the commentator, when he calls the race, depends how excited he gets and everything. And with Frankel, it was like, this is the best ever type of thing. He was saying that the whole way, while Siphonic was exciting towards the end. But do you know what I mean? With the style of the race, I guess, what are you going to say about Frankel when you're commentating on that? He's 10 lengths clear. Yeah, he's still in front. Yeah, he's still in front. He's still in front. And he wins impressively. So I think that has something to do with it. Visually, Frankel was more impressive. But I mean, you can't argue with the stats and the numbers. So I think maybe Ruby's got a point about Siphonic.
And he's, and as you say, two seconds quicker than Frankel. But he also smashed a 45-year-old track record that day as well. So I think it's not just Frankel to compare to. It's everything else as well.
And it's the quality of the opposition. I mean, he beat Barathea. You look, even when you watch it back, Barathea, 2 furlongs down, Michael Roberts must have been thinking, oh my God, how far am I going to win? And Siphonic swooshes down the outside. And Barathea was a top-class horse. Frankel destroyed rivals, but there was no top-class horse behind him.
Turned out to be a pretty good stallion as well, despite a truncated career. I think Ifraj is probably his leading son, who went on to be quite a successful sire himself, Ruby.
Yeah, he only had one run after when he burst a blood vessel in the Sussex Stakes, and therefore, that's your argument. Frankel was the better horse. He went on to achieve what he achieved and was a sounder horse, so therefore, he's a better horse. But he was a good stallion. Ifraj was right. He was an okay stallion, but I just think, as regards Guineas winners, which is on tomorrow, I think Siphonic won a better Guineas than Frankel, and he was a better Guineas winner.
Any chance we get an even better one tomorrow?
I hope so. Racing, and this is some opportunity for it, and racing really could do with Pinatubo coming down the Rowley Mile, and I think doing it more like Siphonic than Frankel. He's a fast horse. If he gets into the dip and quickens up and scoots away, it could just, you know, racing could do with a superstar, and maybe it'll be Pinatubo.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Well, what a journey it's been. And it pretty much has punctuated our lockdown story as well, as ever since racing stopped, we decided to take a walk through the journey that has been Ruby's autobiography. Paddy, it is our final installment of the From the Horse's Mouth book club. And I'm not going to lie, I'm welling up here a little bit at the prospect of no book club next week.
It's funny because lockdown by me, or for me, has been defined by drinking too much, eating too much, being a really bad teacher, and Ruby, the book, not the person. And I finished it there 2 nights ago, and it's because I'm reading on the Kindle. It said 72%, and I was kind of going, Jesus, that's a lot to read in the last 2 chapters. I knew it was the last 2 chapters, but thankfully there's about 100 pages of like Ruby listing off all his wins and all that kind of stuff. So at the end, just showing off. So, but we got it done at the end. And I have to say, I was hoping it would be a bit shitter as a book. to slag you more about it, Ruby, but it was an enjoyable read, because, and the reason why it was enjoyable was we were in the period of nostalgia during lockdown, and you're just remembering back, oh, I remember that Cheltenham winner, I remember that time, yeah, I remember that time, whatever. So that, it was nice to look back. I think I probably would have enjoyed it more now than I would have enjoyed it had I read it, like when you wrote your autobiography when you were like 21 or whatever age you were.
When you bring out the updated version, you should have a few quotes on the outside. So say, like, I don't know, The Times, 5 stars, The Independent, what a read. And then just Paddy Power, I wish it was a bit shitter. What a heartless thing to say, Paddy. But anyway, chapter 16.
I love the way you said we took a walk. Like, honestly, for me sitting here listening to Dewey, it feels like he crawled through it. It's taken that bloody long to get from the start to the finish.
The final chapter in what was a superb read was titled Once a Star, Always a Star. And Ruby, it kind of centres around Cadhg O'Stair completely catching you off guard and winning this final King George.
Yeah, I think like when you think that he pulled up in Punchestown in April and plenty of people had called for his retirement and Paul had decided, no, he wasn't going to make a call then, brought him home, gave him a summer off, brought him back in. I remember being in Haydock with him and he was quite bullish that he'd win the Betfair Chase. And, you know, he booked out and beat Long Run. But I guess he thought the end had come, but it hadn't. And then he went and won another Betfair Chase and went and won another King George. And like that day in Kempton when he won his fifth King George, even in Haydock, the reception he got, and again in Kempton, it was incredible. That was a day that I was lucky to be on his back, because, like, God, Kempton that day was just brilliant.
And so concludes...
Hang on.
Go on.
Can I make a point about... it really reminded me. I had a little... The last thing I did with your book was I had a little chuckle. And the reason why was because... Do you remember that episode of Father Ted?
Far Away?
No, not that one. No, The Cool Priest. Do you know the young fellow who's smoking and everything? And Oasis are blurred. He go, blur. I mean, Oasis. I mean, remember that cool priest right here?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it was almost your last sentence in the book, but certainly your last two paragraphs in the book. You basically went out of your way to say, like, I didn't love Cadhg O'Stair. I didn't love him. Like, I really liked him, but I didn't love him. And it was, I just felt like I was here, like, it was like a younger version of you was embarrassed to be in the book. Do you know what I mean? I got your point.
Do you want me to change what I wrote in the book now and say, oh, I shouldn't have written that, it was wrong? On mature reflection, as I look back on it, I loved him.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, that would be nice, yeah. You may now kill this section.
No, well, so concludes the book club, but I was looking down at... you released the book early 2012, Ruby?
I thought you were telling me you were looking down and released another book.
I'm looking at winners you've ridden since and horses that don't get a mention. I think Covega would probably get a bit more space if she was there. Hurricane Fly probably would have got a bit more. On the Soul, Vautour, Any Power, Vroom Vroom Mag. The list goes on, and you achieved a lot more since. So basically what I'm telling you is 2.0. The second installment of the story is crying out to be written.
I'd say that book won't be written as long as I'm doing this podcast with you, so I have to endure another another sequence like this.
Well, I'd say fire up the typewriter. And that was the From the Horse's Mouth Book Club.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Yes, it's time for this week's tipping section, and I'm delighted to be joined, even a little bit late, by Mr. Frank Hickey. Frank, how are you?
Ah, not too bad. Sorry for being late, but, you know, I'm busy.
That's all right. Better late than never, as they always say. Big weekend. Terrestrial broadcasting of racing is back after a hiatus, and we go to Newmarket this weekend for the Guineas Festival. The first race we're going to look at is the Palace House at 150 on Saturday. What do you make of it?
Yeah, just finished pricing it there this morning. I liked the claims of Far Above, very lightly raised. We had 4 starts, 3 wins, over 7 furlongs and 6 furlongs, dropping back to 5 furlongs for the first time. But he's a strong traveller, and I think the drop back to 5 with plenty of pace on here really suit him. He's won at Newmarket before, so James Tate, he's had a winner already, a two-year-old winner, and a good few run well. So he's the one I like. I think he's starting to shorten up in the betting there now the last 24 hours.
225 Newmarket Saturday over 10 furlongs is the Dahlia Stakes, and Terrabellum tops the market, Frank.
Yeah, I'd be small but worried if they don't get too much rain there. All her form's in soft ground, though she might well handle. She sees the start, she should handle decent ground. But Queen Power was one I liked last year. She was unbelievably keen in all her races. You just felt that if she got that keenness out of her and learned to settle, she's a massive engine. Like, if you go back even to the Ribblesdale, she pulled the whole way around and was still only beaten four lengths by Starcatcher. 10 furlongs, fast ground, a four-year-old from Michael Stout, who's made a fast start to the season as well. I think she's a bit of value against Terrabellum.
3 o'clock Newmarket is the listed Newmarket Stakes over 10 furlongs, but probably will have an impact on the Derby market. Frank, Wal Koenig was very impressive last season on his only start and is, of course, half-brother to Wal Geist, so it could be interesting.
Yeah, he's a kingman half-brother to Wal Geist, who's really well-bred. The Times boys absolutely were losing their life over him at Wolverhampton. He was very impressive. The second ran okay up at Newcastle behind a nice Brantavarian horse during the week. He's already about 10-1 for the Derby, so he could actually be clear favourite if he's impressive. It's difficult to see him being beaten. But again, we only have one run to go on, so we don't know. But he was very impressive on debut.
Anything worth mentioning at Newcastle before we move on to the 2,000 guineas?
Yeah, the Cigarro is interesting on the all-weather. Would hold, of course, bolted up in the Northumberland Plate 2 years ago there. He's very good fresh. He's won first time out the last 2 years. It's a very competitive race now, mind, but he's an each-way price. I think he's worth two bob each way. He might get his own way out front, hopefully. And also, it's worth keeping an eye on Palace Pier runs in the handicap off 98. He was relatively short for the Guineas before they rerouted him here, and I think St. James Palace is his main aim to start the season. So off American 98, he should really be absolutely holding up here.
The main event at 3:35 on Saturday is, of course, the Kipco 2,000 guineas, and Frank Pinatubo 4-5 favourite, and it's 11-2 and bigger the rest. What do you make of the first classic of the year?
Yeah, it's very difficult to know. Like, you know, Pinatubo was running to 11 last year. That would be like his rating's 128. That'll win you the guineas nearly every year. So, like, he doesn't have to improve. He just needs to even stay where he's at. If he does that, the rest have £10 or so to find. At the same time, he's 4-5. Air Force Blue was a really sharp favourite with a similar enough profile. He hadn't run over 7 furlongs, I don't think. But and he was beaten out the gate. So, at the prices, he wouldn't be for me, just because it's small but unknown how he's trained on. Although he is obviously the most likely winner. I think for a bet, I thought with Cheetah was a bit of value each way. Obviously, he was impressive when he was made at the Curragh last year over 7 furlongs. That form's so-so. It was beaten on Doncaster when they went slow and he was staying on again. The race wasn't really run to suit. Was very impressive in the Group 3 Tyrosol Stakes here last year, winning by 7 lengths. That race was okay as well. He was third in the Dewhurst, but the ground was soft enough and he now was against him. The good to firm ground really suits him. I think he's got a really good each-way chance. I think I'd be disappointed if he doesn't hit the 3. I think that, like, if Pinatubo, for any reason, hasn't trained on, I think he might be the one to pick up the piece with Frank on board.
Wichita or Wichita each way for Frank Hickey in the 2,000 guineas. Ruby Walsh, Pinatubo training on. Is he big enough? Is he strong enough? Will he train on from 2 to 3? A lot of people trying to pick holes in him at this stage. Could it just be as simple as he is the best horse in the race?
It looks to be, and I suppose at 4 to 5, people are trying to pick holes, but on form and what we know, he does look the best horse. He wasn't a flashy two-year-old at home, but he was unbelievable on the track. You know, if there's any concern, maybe it's the fact that Arizona and Cameco are drawn in 13 and 15. They're quite a distance away from Pinatubo, who's in 7. You remember last year when Magna Grecia won, he got in a breakaway group on the stand side of 3 and was hard to peg back. But no, I think Pinatubo is the one. And I'd be looking for something without Pinatubo. And I think maybe Royal Dornock. I think he's 18-1 without Pinatubo. He's drawn in stall 2, so he'll be in Pinatubo's race, whatever happens with his split on the stand side. And I think he could follow Pinatubo down there and hopefully be in the first 4 at 18-1 each way.
Couldn't agree with you more, actually. Thought he was tough out in the Royal Lodge, and Cameco went on to Frank that form afterwards. Paddy Power, 2,000 guineas. Talk to me.
Yeah, so I'm using Cameco as a yardstick as well, actually. I'm tipping up a horse that got stuffed by Cameco last time, because that's the way I like to do things. Kinross each way, because I read something Harry Bentley was saying, that Kinross got a really bad bang when he was favoured, and very disappointing, got well beaten by Cameco. But I got a big bump in that race and ran pretty inexperienced. But the time before at Newmark was really, really impressive. So I'm a bit worried about Rafe Beckett not having had a winner, and a horse, some of the horses have run not great so far, but kind of with a blind bit of faith, I'm thinking Kinross each way.
Very good. Kinross each way for Paddy Power in the 2000 guineas. Frank, Sunday, truly all our dreams are arriving at once. We've got back-to-back days of terrestrial racing, and Newmarket continues. And the first race we're going to take a look at on Sunday is at 150. It's the listed Buckhound Stakes, and 10 runners go to post.
Yeah, Communique has got a very good record in Newmarket, particularly fast ground, so it'll be interesting to see how much rain falls. We're just looking there, there's 6-7 mils kind of predicted, but like if the temperatures stay up, that won't do much bar maintaining the ground or maybe put a slight ease. It's good to firm there at the moment. He obviously has won at Group 2 level at Newmarket last year, winning the Prince of Wales Stakes. His form tailed off, but that was like over in Germany. On Newmarket, he's got an excellent record. Ryan Moore takes the ride, and I think he's the one to beat there.
Very good. We'll take a look at the 3 o'clock. It is the Pretty Polly. These fillies could have impacts on other markets down the line. Frank, what do you make of these?
Yeah, I would be worried about Rafe Beckett's form, but I really like the horse at Trefoil in this. Rafe Beckett's made a slow enough start. It'd be a small worry, but this Trefoil was quite impressive winning at Newmarket at the tail end of last year. I'd kind of marked out potentially an Oaks horse, and she's a fair price. She's about 8-1 at the moment. Oh, that was an E2A price. So yeah, hopefully she might get Rafe Beckett on the board.
Good racing in Haydock on Sunday as well. Feature race in the card is the Brigadier Gerard. For older horses, Bangkok appears, Telecaster, Ellercam. Frank, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, it's a cracking race. Sangaris now is going to run there. He's been pulled out of his race at Newmarket on Friday, so it's going to be an absolute cracker. Sangaris is probably the one horse I'm really looking forward to seeing. I think he's going to make up into a Group 1 horse this year. Definitely, he was so impressive winning the Hampton Court at Royal Ascot last year. The only issue would be perhaps they have half an eye on Ascot again this year. Mark Johnson's made an absolute cracking start to the season, and maybe Ellercam might be the one to win this race.
Ellercam for Frank Hickey and the Brigadier Gerard. We move on to the main event on Sunday. It is at 3:35. It is at Newmarket, and it is the Kipco 1000 Guineas. Ruby, we'll start with you. Quadrilateral even tops the market at 9-4. Love 7-2. And Jessica Harrington, who we spoke to earlier, her Mill Isle is a 5-1 third favourite with Paddy Power currently.
Yeah, it's a cracking race. Obviously, Quadrilateral won the Fillies Mile in Newmarket back in October, so there's no worries about the trip. She beat Love and Kay and Pepper that day. Love had won the Maiglair Stakes at the Curra before that, over 7 furlongs. And Mill Isle was very good when we last saw her as well. I don't know why, but I'm going to go with Love. I think maybe being by Galileo, she could have improved from 2-3, a step up to a mile, even though she was behind Quadrilateral in the Fillies Mile last October. But I just think Galileo's do improve from 2-3, and maybe Love will have improved enough to beat Quadrilateral.
Very good. Love for Ruby Walsh and the 1000 Guineas. Paddy?
I guess Ruby and Frank have tipped up Aidan O'Brien horse in the 2000, and if they go well or go close, then I could definitely make a case for, or not make a case, but I could see Love running very well, because you kind of have a blind faith that he's going to have his horses right. And if he does, he often does well in both those races, I think, not having checked that style at all. But I'm going to go against that for an each way price again for Cloak of Spirits for Richard Hannon, in the hope that this one comes on a bit, because it was third, but only beaten about half a length behind Daye in the Rockfell last year, and battled really well there. It kind of just was, you know, never quite going to get there, but kept going all the way to the line. So if he comes on a bit, could be brave enough to get involved in the finish, or she rather, could be brave enough to get involved in the finish.
Very good. Righto. Best bets for the weekend. We will start with Frank.
Do you want my opinion at all, Tom?
Oh, sorry. I'm too focused on your. Yeah. I was blinded by for the benefit of our listeners. I was in a daze looking at Frank is in a tie dye t-shirt, and I feel like I'm on an acid trip at the moment just looking at it. But anyway, Frank, go on. Talk to me about the 1000 guineas.
Yeah, well, I did a bit of research on this there last week and put up a a load of different stats. The one thing I thought was very interesting was how experience really matters in the 1,000 Guineas. Just look at the number of runs the winner has had coming into the Guineas in the last 10 years. It's been 7, 9, 4, 5, 5, 4, 7, 13, 3, and 5. So that would be something against Quadrilateral, perhaps, that just only had the 3 runs and without the benefit of a prep this year, it might be against her. The other thing as well is going back to that Filly's Mile. It was really strongly run. They went too hard out in front and she actually benefited from the pace collapsing. I think if that much rain doesn't get into the ground and it's riding on the fast side of good, I think she'll actually be vulnerable over a mile. The two I liked were Love and Boomer. Love has shortened up an awful lot in the last week. The vibes are very strong for her, not just for this, but for the Oaks. She's been very popular for the Oaks as well. But I've had a few quid on Boomer. She ties in from that Filly's Mile. The ground would have been against her. That was her first start on softest ground. Back on fast ground, she was only a length off Powerful Breeze in the May Hill of Doncaster in the run previous to Filly's Mile. If Powerful Breeze is in here, she'd probably be vying for favouritism of Quadrilateral. So about the 12-14-1 mark, I thought Boomer was a fair each way bet.
Okay, Boomer for Francis Hickey in the 1,000 Guineas. Lads, best bets for the weekend. Frank, we'll stay with you, given you were so put out by not giving your spake for the 1,000 Guineas. So go on, give us your best bet for the weekend.
I'm going to say Queen Power and the Dahlia Stakes at Newmarket.
225, Queen Power and the Dahlia Stakes for Frank Hickey. Ruby?
I'm going to go with Royal Lion in Newcastle. I know Frank has tipped up another horse, but I think Royal Lion's third behind Kew Gardens and Stradivarius and Ascot at the back end of the year is the best piece of form on offer. In that case, it's Garrow Stakes at 235.
Royal Lion Tyneside for Ruby Walsh and Patrick Power.
I'm going to steal Frank's tip in the Palace House and put up Far Above as a nap weekend.
Paddy Power plagiarises to round out the From the Horse's Mouth treble this week. Before we go, very quickly, it's been an extended tipping section this week. We have to finish our horses for the tracker. We didn't get to finish it last week because we had so much on. But Frank, you can lead off here. We'll keep to a very short line on each.
Yeah, English King, Fred Walker, runs actually today in the Lingfield Derby trial. I've had a few quid on for the Derby itself. Quite impressive up in Newcastle in second start, the second third of one since. Hopefully he'll win today and give me a little bit of a sweat for the Derby. Another one, Hubor, actually runs in Lingfield today. Mark Johnson, three-year-old filly. She won a good nursery at Newmarket in her last start off 78. She's gone up £12 and 90 performs, worked out really well the second. Separate was touched off in a group three, and there's been loads of winners in behind her. She looks progressive enough. And my last one will be Streamline for Clive Cox. Won group three Serena Stakes at Kempton on his last start. Funny enough, he's been left on the same mark of 100. I'm not sure whether the Commonwealth Cup's the aim, but if he goes and handicaps off a mark of 100, that would look a really nice mark for him. And I could see him running those big field handicaps throughout the year, maybe picking one of them up.
Paddy Power?
Just trying to get up the text here from Paddy Desmond. King of Change, who won the QE2 last year and is likely to improve from that and will be running in a division that has been relatively weak for the last few years.
Excellent reading.
I think it's the second division, I'm not sure.
It's the Championship. Ruby?
That's really left field, Paddy, yeah.
Forgot to ask Jessica Harrington about her, a horse earlier when we were talking to her, but she has a horse entered in the Irish 2,000 Guineas called Free Solo. He's only had the 2 runs. He was third to Year of the Tiger and Inish Free on his debut, and then bolted up when he beat a couple of useful horses on his next start. He's only rated 97, and I think what he turned up in a handicap somewhere before a big race, he's worth following.
And for good measure, I'll throw in current option for Aidan McGuinness, who was a good winner of the Premier Handicap on Champions Weekend last year. And off 94, I think he might have more to give and hopefully will turn into a stakes horse by the end of the season. Frank Hickey, thanks a million.
No problem. Enjoy the weekend, lads.
You're a gent. Cheers, best of luck on the racing podcast now.
Enjoy yourself, Frank.
Good luck, lads.
Right, that's all we've got time for this week. My thanks indeed to Paddy Power.
You're very welcome, Tom. Looking forward to the wheelbarrow full of cash after this weekend.
And Ruby Walsh, thanks a million.
Where are you keeping that wheelbarrow, Paddy?
Yes, I'm oiling it now. I'm just thinking I can't really bet in cash because the betting shops aren't open yet. Anyway,
you'll find somebody to take it. Lads, thanks a million. Good luck. And cheers, we'll talk to you next week.
Au revoir. Be good.
Cheers, lads.
Show off with your au revoir.
What a packed show that was. Thanks to our very own Grundy and Bustino, Paddy and Ruby. Thanks to Jesse Harrington, Frank Hickey. And of course, thanks to you for listening. We'll be publishing next week's show on Thursday ahead of the Irish Guineas, so make sure to look out for that. And don't forget to check out the enhanced From the Horse's Mouth treble on paddypower.com. But for now, I've been Tom Nugent, and that has been From the Horse's Mouth.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.